This is Audible.
Mephiston, Blood of Sanguinius, by Darius Hinks. Read by Richard Reed. Prologue. They circled in the deep. Two sorcerers, blooded and drowned beneath a diamond sea. Their quest for knowledge had led them to the unknowable. They had peeled themselves from the bones of reality and become lost, tumbling towards oblivion, clinging to a dizzying truth. They were a moment away from eternity, a victory away from omnipotence. If one could best the other, they would be free, born anew in the white heat of change. The game was almost done. Their duel was centuries old, but even now, as they reached the end game, they would not relent. Their magic was spent, their familiars banished, their grimoires burned, their armies ground into dust. But they fought on with sinew, knuckle, and claw, howling as they sank into a glittering abyss, drunk on the promise of its power. The sorcerers reached the seabed, a blinding mirror of silver, and lunged, hacking at each other's ruined armour. One was clad in gleaming white, the plates warped into ivory whorls by the fury of the battle. Rather than eyes, he viewed his enemy through a single fist-sized sapphire embedded deep in his forehead. The jewel was gilded and clasped, a lidded eye, cold and glimmering with rage. The second sorcerer wore voluminous robes, a storm of azure that flowed from her skin, girdled by a belt of fire. As the sorcerers fought, their blood formed patterns in the sea, coral bright flowers that spiraled around them as they began to die. The patterns became glimpses of madness, an inconceivable architecture of jumbled physics, a labyrinth of impossible colour. Their blows grew weaker, and the sorcerer's breath slipped away, robbed and refracted by the diamond sea. Then, as their vision dimmed, the blossoms of warp fire flashed brighter, searing into their minds, halting them at the last threshold of death. Magic and dreams coalesced, forming a single hooded figure, drifting towards them on the crystalline currents. It was a frail-looking monk, dressed in simple robes. Where his face should have been, there was an avian skull, jutting out from his hood like a pale claw.
"We dream, dreaming, dreamed," he said, speaking without opening his beak, his voice a confusing polyphony of tones. "But if infinity comes, came, or ever was, what will we do? What have you ever offered that you could truly give?"
The sorcerers rushed towards him, rapacious grins on their faces. "I am the one," rumbled the white-armoured sorcerer, struggling to speak, his vocal cords shredded. "Pick me! I will be your most loyal servant. I will be your greatest student." "He's a fool!" gasped the second sorcerer. "Choose me! I have learned so many things that he could never even conceive of. He knows nothing of true change. He can never understand the brightness of the flame. But I do, my lord! I do!" The monk waved for silence. Rather than an arm, the limb was a snake, coiled and tense, eager to strike.
"You showed, and will show, that you have shown such promise. You have reached the beginning at the end. But I will despair of you in the past, and I despair of you in the future. Your strategies are obvious. Your wars will be dull. Your games were led, leading, and will lead to nothing."
The sorcerers fell silent and withdrew into the darkness, exchanging confused glances.
"I gave, and will give you, a final chance," said the monk. You fretted the legions you will be given and waste your gifts on pointless wars. But I will grant you a new arena.
A note of amusement entered the monk's voice.
I will steal you a world of clever fools, an unruffled pool waiting to be disturbed.
My lord, began the one-eyed sorcerer, we will not bore you again. All we need is
a prize won and worth winning,
said the monk.
And you shall have it. Whichever one of you brought me the blade Petrific, shall become my acolyte, and lived long enough to learn the true wisdom of the flame.
The one-eyed sorcerer opened his mouth to reply, but the monk was gone, and a strange landscape had opened up beneath them. They fell, and as they dropped, reality rushed back into view. They saw a world of spires and bones, a planet-sized tomb, gleaming with promise. The sorcerer smiled as they parted, eager for the game ahead. The Wars of Sanctitude entered their ninth decade, and the Cradian sector remained trapped, mired in a Stygian swamp of superstition and misbelief. It became impossible to record even a fraction of the atrocities perpetrated in the God Emperor's name. The Cronian sector became a byword for mystery and deceit, but there were few on Terra who could honestly say which of the warring cults were heretical and which were ferocious defenders of the faith. There was no logic to the wars, and no sign of an end. As their most precious relics slipped deeper into the morass, on the brink of being lost, the senior prelates of the Adeptus Ministorum petitioned the High Council of Terra for aid. They were refused. Brutal as they were, the Wars of Sanctitude were only a single note of pain, set against the great opera of screams that filled the stars. The ruinous powers were extending their reach into every corner of the galaxy, and the bickering of a few priests barely warranted a footnote on the Council's order of business. It seemed that the Cronian sector would simply fall from view. Another unmarked tragedy of the 41st millennium. Then, divine providence appeared to intervene. In the halls of a fortress monastery, on the Blood Angel's home world of Baal, a pair of blood-filled eyes turned towards the most obscure cardinal world in the Cronian sector, Divinus Prime. Beneath the soaring walls of Arx Murus, the Lord of Death heard a voice calling to him, from across the void. Proculator Obath, The Wars of Sanctitude, Volume 2.